Welcome to The Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. The coffee is hot, the conversation lively, and we're talking real estate. I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P., bringing you news and information from the real estate world. So pull up that chair, get out the coffee and pen and pencil, and let's join in the fun. All right. Good morning out there, everyone. This is Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P. Good morning, Miss Lisa P.
Good morning, Cliff.
Hey, maybe you can close that door so we're not here in the hallway. It was a haunting. Oh, now we're locked away in our little room here. Okay, so good morning, everyone out there. And we also have with us Carlos in the booth. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning. Good to see you guys again.
Yeah, it's been a while.
You've been a while. I noticed you're flying your A's hat today.
Definitely. They won yesterday, so, you know.
Oh, so you've abandoned the Giants. That's it, right? They're down. It's no point.
My heart's in San Francisco. My wallet's in Oakland.
Oh,
I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, folks, if you listened to last week's show, you know that we had a little mix-up. And our guest at that time, Amy Meisner, was not on the air with us. And we're going, gosh, what the heck had happened? And we'll then find out that, whoa, she wasn't scheduled for last week. That's why she wasn't there. So it was a cliffism.
It was a cliffism. I knew it.
It was a cliffism. So, you know, we apologize for all of those nasty things we said about you, Amy. But
I had your back, girl.
Oh, yeah. There you go. So it's my bad. Anyway, we're going to talk this week with Amy. And now we're fortunate because we have our partner on with her, Cheryl Simon.
Oh, maybe the two of them will be bantering back and forth.
Uh-oh.
Disagreeing.
Disagreeing, yeah. So as partners often do sometimes, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, moving on. They're with a firm called Benoit Meisner Simon & Company. It's a contemporary luxury company in the Boston area. I think they're just outside the Boston area, but we'll clarify all that. These ladies were on the show about a year ago. And so it's going to be kind of interesting checking in with them, seeing what they've been doing, and seeing how their firm's going and how the market is doing back there, because we've got some definite market movement these days. Should be interesting.
Yeah, it should be. I look forward to that.
Yeah, if you have some questions and you'd like to join us in the conversation, 415-431-8255. Again, that's 415-431-TALK. But before we get to our guests, all right, I always like to put Lisa P. on the spot here. So how's it going this week?
It is going very well. Thank you for asking.
Uh-huh. Any interesting quandaries out there in the real estate world?
Well, you know, it's I'm seeing a lot of properties go in escrow very quickly,
uh-huh.
And I'd say maybe 40% of them are falling out just as quickly.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
And so I've been asking the agents out there, so what's going on? And,
yeah.
Oftentimes when you're competing in a multiple offer situation, you're ending up looking at a stack of disclosures, whether it's just the agent's disclosures or the seller's disclosures or the umpteen thousand inspections that they've
right.
got. But the buyers are feeling so hurried that they're kind of going, yada, 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 yeah, 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 I'll sign. Well, once they get the deal, then
They're actually reading them.
Yes, and they're going, uh-oh, this is no good. So we're seeing a little bit of blowout.
Wow. Okay. Well, so what do we do to stop that? Or, you know, what do buyers do to avoid that? Or, I mean, it sounds like they're just fighting for the house just to
exactly.
get it and
they're
then be able
to get on first base.
Okay.
It's a baseball thing. It's a home run when you close escrow.
I see. Okay. So maybe we'll ask the ladies if they're seeing that trend out mm-hmm. there. Interesting. Okay. Well, if you'd like to get in on our conversation again, join us here at KEST 1450 AM by calling 431-8255. Or what else can they do?
Well, in case they miss the show and still want to keep up on what we've been talking about, they can visit the show on archives and iTunes.
Uh-huh.
Or they can just make it even simpler and go to the propertybeat.com website.
Uh-huh.
Which I've tried to go to myself, and I get a little lost.
Do you?
I do. So I think maybe we need to do a blow-by-blow.
Well, you know, it's also a place, and people don't know this if you haven't checked out our website, but our website also has articles from our guests. They're asked to submit a little article to us, and so we often have changing content constantly going on there. So join us there. And finally, to let our listening audience know what the heck is going on with us, we are actually moving our time slots
on September 12th, starting on September 12th, we'll be now at the 7 to 8 o'clock time slot here on KEST. So,
and I have a full expectation that that phone is going to be ringing.
That's right. There it is. Because it's going to be, there's going to actually be more human beings awake.
Exactly.
Carlos is nodding his head. Yeah. Carlos, will you be awake with us?
I will definitely be more awake.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick look at some real estate stories for you right after this quick message.
Hi, this is Cliff Perotti, host of The Property Beat. So you may not know this, but we are sponsored by a local real estate company here in Northern California called Lyon & Foster International. The good folks at Lyon & Foster are an international luxury real estate company, helping home buyers and sellers as well as investors, whether they're buying or selling a home locally here in the Bay Area or abroad in a foreign country. So if you'd like some help or like to discuss those opportunities, please give the folks at Lyon & Foster a call. You can reach them toll-free at 855-367-4200. Again, 855-367-4200. Or you can email them at thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. Again, that's thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com.
Here once again, it's time for news stories that we're bringing to you from the week. So what do you got, Miss Lisa?
Oh, I just can't wait to report on this one. You know, Miss Celine Dion?
Oh, yeah.
Well, how many houses?
Miss Vegas now. Yeah,
well, actually, she owns a spread in Jupiter Island, Florida, and she's just put it on the market for $42
million. $42
million. Do you know what $42 million will get you in Florida?
Celine Dion.
Yeah, well, no, I maybe her husband. And her son. Oh, I think she has two now. Anyway, so...
Two husbands or two sons?
I think she's got two sons. I don't ever remember seeing her pregnant with that second one. Anyway...
It's an alien baby.
Well,
okay, go ahead.
I don't know where it came from. But, so it's a 10,000-square-foot bohemian-style main house.
There's right.
An eight-bedroom guest house.
Mm-hmm.
A pool house with a kitchen.
But an eight-bedroom guest house.
I'm not even done.
Oh, go ahead.
A beach house with a massage room.
Uh-huh.
She has a lazy river, so that means you get somewhere on the property.
So maybe you sit in like a little thingy and you just kind of, what do you call those, inner tubes, and you just kind of roll down the river?
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? Water slides.
Uh-huh.
I want to go.
And sounds like a theme park.
A water gun station. Do you think the water gun station?
Oh, my God.
Do you think that's for her son or her husband?
I don't know, but that would be really fun.
Actually, if it was for her husband, she'd have a casino downstairs, because you've heard he has a little bit of a gambling thing going on.
No, I haven't heard that at all.
Oh, dude.
Maybe that's why she's not so often in Vegas.
Yeah, it's his thing. So, anyway, she's trying to unload this puppy for $72.5 million.
Wait, I thought it was $42
million. No, I said 70.
Oh.
72. Don't stop me midstream.
Okay.
Anyway, she's got...
It went up. It's inflation. You know, this is taped. We can go back and roll back and hear this.
For those of you that care, it really is 72
okay,
million.
Okay, 72 mil.
Anyway, evidently it's got all sorts of opulent fixtures.
Uh-huh.
And this is, after all, what one would expect from the woman who wore a 7-pound tiara with 2,000 Australian crystals on her wedding day as a tiara.
Well, there's some expensive real estate.
And a heavy headpiece. I wonder why her neck is so strong.
Speaking of heavy headpieces, I'm rolling right into my new story. This is perfect.
Oh, excellent.
The state of New York Attorney General has sued Donald Trump.
Again? Is that what he was talking about?
How'd you like
news?
That for a heavy headpiece segue? So he has gotten... Donald Trump was doing these tours around the U.S., and they were just throwing his name out there, and he was doing these real estate tours. Well... In that process, he came back home, so to speak, in New York, and he offered this university, this exceptional elite real estate university, where people would pay anywhere from $10,000 to $35,000 for literally 3-day courses. And they were promised that they'd be talking to these really elite people in the industry, and more than 5,000 people signed up for these things. You know, that's a pretty good business. Well, apparently...
So these were students.
These were students that paid, over 5,000 people paid $10,000 to $35,000. Well, apparently they didn't deliver. They had people that were unrecognizable teaching these courses. There was no elite anything to it. And so the attorney general agreed with them, and they're suing Trump and his organization. He's, of course, claiming, I didn't have anything to do with this. It was just my namesake.
Okay. Okay. Let me ask you a question.
What?
Would you sign up for a course like that?
Actually,
I'm surprised you didn't sign up for a course like that.
No, I think it's about, well, all right, so wait a minute. So if you were going to sit, if I knew that I was going to have 3 days with Donald Trump, I think that's worth $10,000, right? If he's going to be sharing his insights on something.
And you think the
hair
man.
Hair care, you know, that kind of stuff.
This is exactly my point. You think the guy that's wearing his hair like that, that has to overcome his bald spot by covering his hair over it, is going to start telling you the real tricks of the trade?
I don't know, but he clearly didn't. The Better Business Bureau rated his organization a D- with this university, so they received 23 complaints in 2010, and anyway, it's got him in hot water. So
I think his daughter, Ivanka, is the fixer.
Well, there it is. All right, so what else do you have?
Let's see. I'm toying between Dexter and a chocolate factory.
Dexter.
That's
yeah,
where you
yeah,
want to
Dexter.
Go.
Anyway, Dexter Real Estate?
No, Dexter, the actor guy, Michael C. Hall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For those of you that love that TV show, he has paid or had paid $0.19 million for his rustic-looking Spanish retreat in Beverly Hills.
What was that number?
1.95.
Oh, 1.95.
So, you know, entry level. And, you know, the show's been going very well, so he's moved on to another property, and he's got this puppy on the market for $2.35.
And there was a large pause. So basically you're saying he bought a house, he's making money on it, and now he's selling it.
Yep, because he's moved up in the world.
Where's he going?
It's probably somewhere else undisclosed because he's Dexter, and he might have to kill you before he could share it with you. It all depends on his ratings. Right now he's renting. And then depending on how the season goes, then, you know.
Oh, no, this is the final season.
Oh, so, well, then.
Yeah, so we're going to move right on with California home sales. So since you took us there, investors are playing a smaller role in California home sales, reports the California Association of Realtors. So distressed properties, and we've talked about this, there's been less and less activity.
Yeah.
Well, they dropped to only 17% of those sales in July compared to 20% in June, but more importantly, down from 40% from a year ago. So a year ago, foreclosure, distressed properties, short sales, all that were 40% of the market. They're less than 17% or 17.1% this year. So that's great.
So where are these properties? Do you have any idea?
All, you mean the ones that are left over?
Yeah.
You know what? We're still seeing, like in Marin and San Francisco, we're still seeing about 12 to 14% here.
Really?
And then we're seeing a larger piece still out in the valley and in Southern California in particular, but on the average, only 17%. So that's good. That means the market is coming back. They're saying that it's turning, CAR reports that it's turning into a homeowner's marketplace. So that's a good sign.
Well, when I'm seeing some of these short sales out there,
They
look like they're regular sales because there's no big, you know, 20% discount because it's, you know,
right.
Distressed.
And they're also seeing, we're seeing what little short sales there are left out there. They're not getting the discounts, number one, and they're also going through faster. They're generally going through faster. So, all right, that's our real estate news for the day. We'll be right back after this with some letters from you. Time for the mailbag and seeing what you've sent us. These are questions that have been submitted to us by you, our listeners.
Well, this morning we have a question from Nancy in Portland, Oregon. And her following question via the website is, I own a TIC in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking about using it, good luck, for a vacation rental. Is there any problem with doing this?
Wow. Okay. So the first, boy, it's an interesting point because this in San Francisco is a very big controversy right now.
Mm.
So the first thing I would say to you, Nancy, is look to your homeowners association's rules and regs. A lot of HOAs are refusing to allow short-term rentals in their units.
Why do you think that is? Because it seems to me like it would only benefit.
No, they don't want their place to become a hotel. You know, you own a house. You don't want people tromping in with suitcases five times a month. So That's number one, is do you have a restriction in your CC&R, so to speak, against your HOA docs against using it as a vacation rental? The second thing is that in San Francisco, you got to be a little careful. There was a wonderful article put out by the San Francisco Apartment Owners Association on the fact that the city is looking really hard at this, saying that, well, wait a minute, you in effect are becoming a hotel, which means you may in effect be subject to the hotel tax rates. And so now they're trying to figure out whether, in fact, they're going to start taxing these VRBOs. And this is really coming from Airbnb is really the ones that are really showing up the most.
So the lucky folks that are here for the America's Cup that are staying in VRBOs,
yeah, yeah,
be happy.
Yeah, you have no rooms next year. No. So, Nancy, I would say to you, honestly, you might want to do some research on what the ramifications could be relative to San Francisco in particular. It's a hot button right now, and you need to do some research. And a question came in from Phil in San Francisco. I want to write an offer on a house, he says, but I want to make sure I can get out of the deal and get my money back if I disapprove of the property during my inspection period. All right. My agent is telling me that I won't lose my deposit if I blow out of the deal for any reason during my inspection period. Is this true? So what do you think?
I think it is true. However, I don't think I would use the excuse my mother-in-law hates it. I think you have to disapprove of the conditions.
Well, yeah. Now, so the contract has changed. The California Association of Realtors contract has really changed a lot over the last few years. It used to require that when you wanted to disapprove of a property, you actually had to tell the seller why you were disapproving, and the seller had the right to try to fix whatever it was you were disapproving of. So if you didn't like the blue walls, they had the right to paint them a different color for you, and you just couldn't blow out of a deal. Now what's happened is the contract gives you the right to blow out for any reason that you find that is just not satisfactory to you. So it could be that, you know, you've sat on the property a bunch of times and you just changed your mind. You don't like it anymore. But you do need to be careful. There are some unusual circumstances.
Give me one.
Like bankruptcy court that could affect your rights there. And so generally, you're pretty much safe on a normal deal, Phil, that yes, you can pretty much get out during your inspection period, and yes, you will get your money back. I will say this, it's no longer called, if you actually read the contract, it's actually called investigations, not inspections. And the reason for that is that it could be anything that you are investigating relative to the property. Maybe you don't like the traffic pattern that's now going on. Maybe you don't like the fact that garbage is picked up on Tuesdays, and Tuesdays you have to be listening to the property beat. So, all right. So if you want to get in on our mailbag, all you need to do is join in the conversation by going to our website at thepropertybeat.com. At the top of the page, there's a button that says submit a question for the show. So who knows? You might be on our mailbag next week. We'll be right back with our guests after this quick break. Hi, this is Cliff Perotti, host of The Property Beat. So you may not know this, but we are sponsored by a local real estate company here in Northern California called Lyon & Foster International. The good folks at Lyon & Foster are an international luxury real estate company, helping home buyers and sellers as well as investors, whether they're buying or selling a home locally here in the Bay Area or abroad in a foreign country. So if you'd like some help or like to discuss those opportunities, please give the folks at Lyon & Foster a call. You can reach them toll-free at 855-367-4200. Again, 855-367-4200. Or you can email them at thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. Again, that's thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. Welcome back to Boston. All right. Our guests this week are Amy Meisner and Cheryl Simon. These ladies, along with their third partner, opened Benoit Meisner Simon and Company in, I want to say this right, Wellesley and Weston, Massachusetts, two of the nation's toniest communities. So welcome back, ladies.
Well, thank you. It's so nice to be here.
And good morning to you. It's not quite as early for you guys on the on that East Coast, huh?
No, it's not as early, but yeah.
I was going to say, it's not as early for us. However, I'd love to be on your coast right now. I haven't been to San Francisco, so I would love to be there.
Well, you have a friend when you come and visit.
There you go.
We'll show you the sites. As our listeners know, we love to ask our guests, kind of right off the bat, if they can tell us something unusual, maybe something kind of cool, maybe something you don't want everybody to know that we can share with our listeners.
Yeah, so, something you'd share with your closest friends of 40,000 people.
Yeah, so what have you got for us, ladies?
Well, it's interesting, when you first called, and there was a little bit of a mix-up last week, so I apologize to everyone there. We were taking four of our top producers. We were on an Amtrak train to Manhattan, and we took them to a show, out to dinner, stayed overnight, and we sort of celebrated our successes last year.
Fun.
So that was kind of a fun little side story that not everybody knows about.
So what did you see?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. What was the show?
We saw Book of Mormon.
Oh, wow.
That was great.
And it was delightful. We were laughing, and it was just a wonderful time to, you know, take a breath and just, you know, have a wonderful time together. So, yeah,
Our third partner would say it was very funny and inappropriate.
Oh, that is right up my, that is my middle name.
You know what's funny is that Lisa P is looking at me like going, like, why aren't we doing that sort of crap with our company?
No, Lisa P is thinking, I'm going to go get my license in Boston and come to work with you ladies.
There it is. Oh, my gosh. We'd like to remind our listeners, if you have a question you'd like to ask us or our guests, please give us a call at 415-431-8255.
For those folks who have no idea of where you are, can you guys explain about your location and describe your company as it exists today?
Well, we have two offices. It's Benoit Meisner Simon & Company, with two offices in Weston and Wellesley. We launched our company just a little over 2.5 years ago in October 2010, and we have 64 brokers working for Benoit Meisner Simon now, two office managers, two marketing people on staff, and we're growing rapidly, and we've become kind of like the go-to Metro West independently owned real estate company in Boston.
Wow, that's great.
I think one of the questions you would also ask about the distance. So from downtown Boston, which most people would know, about 20 minutes drive. You know, it's about a 20-minute drive from downtown Boston to either Wellesley or Weston.
Oh, okay. And then that would be which direction, like northeast or?
Heading west.
Heading west, okay.
All heading right. west.
Well, that helps. For those of us that need a map, that's good.
I don't ever travel without a compass. So you started in October of 2010. How did you make it through the tough times? And any secret tips you might be able to share with us?
This is Amy. It was actually the perfect storm because the market had come to a complete halt in New England. And so it allowed us to really, like, focus and to sit there and create a real vision of what we wanted to create and how to do it better.
Yeah.
And while the big companies at that point were sitting on their laurels and cutting back because times were getting tough, they were cutting back on advertising, they were cutting back on renovating their offices, they were cutting back on staffing, we decided to invest in ourselves. And I think that moment in the real estate industry of coming to a halt, like, worked to our benefit, actually, because we started with a bang and we were noticed immediately. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have been harder to do if the market was, like, roaring at that point.
Yeah.
Now, were all three of you ladies with Coldwell Banker? Because I think both of you guys were, right?
Yeah, all three of us
were. Debbie was out of the Wellesley office, and Amy and I worked as partners in the Weston office. We did this, you know, certainly on purpose, because a lot of people, especially from the Boston region, when they're looking at real estate, you know, the school systems in Wellesley and Weston are really outstanding. Mm-hmm. They offer very different amenities. You know, Wellesley doesn't have large plots of land. Weston does. Mm-hmm. And so they have very, very different. Wellesley has a great town center, and Weston's a little more quiet. You wouldn't come to dinner in Weston. They don't have really a liquor license or a you know, a place for you to really sit down and eat dinner, where as you would in Wellesley. But, you know, we decided that it was very important because the local regional buyers tend to look, if they're not looking Brookline and Newton, they come a little bit further out to Weston and Wellesley, and we knew it was important to have, you know, really a office in both of those towns and to really cross-market and cross-breed our listings.
Wow, that's great. How's your market doing today, and what is your typical average sales price?
You know, so the typical average, I actually looked at last year versus this year because I think that's a, everyone wants to know, you know, what direction we're going in.
Exactly, yeah.
In 2012, I'm going to talk about Wellesley first, the average sale price was $1,138,000.
Oh,
and in, to date, it has gone up a bit to $1,239,000. So it's up almost $100,000 in Wellesley. And in Weston, in the solds last year, we were at $1,428,000 in 2012, and this year we're up $1,436,000 as an average sale. So, you know, kind of similar. I think there's been less inventory on this year, so when you were talking about bid wars, we did see a little bit of that in people pulling back on their finance contingency, which we haven't seen for about 5 or 6 years in a competitive bid situation. It was necessary to do that, you know, to get the, you know, the property.
Well, what do you see? All right, so what do you get for a million? Let's say $1.3 million. Is that the let's say $1.3 million in your marketplace. What kind of a home or how big does that get you?
It's not. Once again, I would say that's kind of like a median price home in these communities, and you get something that's under about 3,000 square foot, four bedroom. It could be a Cape, it could be a Colonial, it could have updated kitchens and bathrooms, but then still need some work. And in Weston, you get a beautiful piece of land, or acre and a half lot. In Wellesley, there's smaller lots, but you're getting a wonderful town center. You know, as Cheryl mentioned, the biggest game changer is low inventory. We're like down 25 to 30% in inventory. And that's really changed the market. So, and but once again, our market is very much geared towards a lot of high end listings over 2 million. And there's a lot of new construction that will go up to 8 to 10 million.
Wow.
And that market's a little different than the 1-2 price sales. Well.
Well, it's interesting that Amy's saying that as well, because it's not also. It's quite typical to see in both of these communities, because there is a shortage of land, so, you know, people will tear down houses. And that's actually almost an average price of what just a house on a great lot in a great location would go for to build your new house.
Wow.
So, you know, when builders or end users are spending $1 million, $2 million, $3 million for land, your package is going to be starting probably at $4 million and going upward.
Wow. Where are most of your buyers coming from, and are you seeing any international buyers coming to your area?
Yeah, of course we are.
Are you?
They're seeing it as an investment right now in Massachusetts, and they're coming from China, they're coming from overseas, and they're coming to educate their children, if you could believe it. I call them bi-coastal, because what happens is an aunt or an uncle or a spouse will come with their high schoolers and middle schoolers, and the husband or the wife will commute back and forth and continue their business back overseas. And they're really coming to educate their children, and they're finding it such a good investment to buy the property that they're moving here. And we saw such an influx of this buyer pool during the summer. And they're also buying properties for investment purposes. They're buying them and they're renting them. So it's changed the rental market in our area as well.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
I think the other interesting thing we're seeing is that oftentimes they're expecting to have the furniture included, which is not typical in our market.
The what included?
The furniture.
And we've also hired, you know, a handful of Mandarin-speaking brokers because, you know, they're very comfortable speaking their own language, and you know, that's really helped us as well. So that's one of the things that I think we've done that is really, you know, in this changing market to help us as well.
Are you seeing some parking of money from these people? In other words, they just want a decent place to park capital for a while. They don't know how long they'll be here. Yeah, interesting.
So does your marketplace slow down in, like, in November until March or anything like that? Do you have a
You know, it's
season?
Interesting. We used to have such defined cycles where, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the market ended Memorial Day. Or the fall market starts, you know, in September after Labor Day. Since economic conditions changed the market, we've seen busy summers, where traditionally summers have been slow.
Wow.
So I'd love to go through another year to see if if that continues.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been seeing a strong market right through the summer, and that's not the traditional market. Usually things slow down. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this year goes. A lot of times weather conditions in New England will dictate when a spring market or a fall market, you know, when a spring market starts, which would be, you know, is it a stormy winter in January, and you can't even open up front doors, it'll slow us up, you know, what traditionally is called the spring market in February. But the cycles, I find, have been completely off. So you sort of go with where the market, when the market activity says put your house on the market, you put it on the market.
There you go.
You know, and a footnote to that, I think, too, is that in this, you know, climate, Amy's, you know, absolutely correct that the weather does dictate the activity level on houses. But, you know, the New Englanders always like to put their houses on, you know, in the springtime because everything is in bloom and pretty and the flowers are out. And it's just such an attractive time to have your house on the market. But by that time, you know, 30-40% of the buyers have already bought because they really do start looking right around January 15th.
Mm-hmm. All right,
so
folks,
as listing agents, we're always encouraging people to stay ahead of the curve and put your house on the market because there's a much more active buyer pool at that time than it does, you know, than during the April, May, June market. Even though there's a market, there's really much more of an influx of buyers coming through, you know, getting a head start right after Christmas season.
All right, we'll be right back after this quick break. And we are back with our special guests, Amy Meisner and Cheryl Simon of Benoit Meisner Simon & Company. If you have a question you'd like to ask our guests or join in the conversation, 431-8255 in the big 415 area code. So you're obviously in an upscale market, ladies. How's, you know, the recovery you're saying is just full board? I mean, is it are you seeing sales and prices skyrocketing right now? Or what kind of appreciation and activity have you seen over the last year? Or even really the last quarter.
It's funny because all three of us built our careers on the high end when we were with Coldwell Banker.
Right.
And really the backbone of our company is in terms of our marketing and our knowledge is really the high end market.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest shift I'm seeing, and Cheryl could add to this, is building. There's such a premium for land right now. And when you get these high end buyers, they're very cerebral buys and they're very educated. And some of these old estates that used to be these signature homes but need complete updating used to be rare, and they used to fly off the market. And those are harder properties to sell right now. And in the high end, we're seeing these buyers choosing to build and wanting new.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the biggest trend in the high end market. So once again, land has become even more precious in our market.
You know, we saw that happen, boy, I want to say it was about 10, 15, maybe 15 years ago, where homes were being bought consistently and just torn down.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, is are you seeing a lot of people purchasing these older homes and basically scraping everything but one wall?
Yeah, because the zoning laws in towns like Weston and Wellesley, they've gotten so strict in terms of, you know, percentages of lot size. It's called large house review, or the planning board has gotten involved. And the local ordinances have gotten so strict in terms of building and not over-developing these towns, you know, and keeping their roads rural-looking. And so, yeah, it's gotten even more expensive to build. It's gotten more difficult for builders to do spec homes. and to develop the property. So they're trying to circumvent these zoning laws by keeping a certain percentage of the foundation,
right,
a certain amount of the roof line. That's what we're seeing right now, and it's even becoming more expensive to do this.
So how is
But I also see, because, the people that we generally deal with have the means to have what they want. You know, I think it's just an easy lifestyle to just get on with your life and get your decorator in there and, basically move in as opposed to getting involved with contractors and renovating a house. And oftentimes if these are reload buyers, it's a matter of, getting the right person in there, interviewing them. Oftentimes both people are working, so they don't have the time to sit there and, really spend the time, getting exactly what they want or hoping that they get exactly what they want. Whereas new construction, it's really a clean palette.
Now, are your buyers commuters? I mean, it sounds like you're saying they both work. Do they both work in the city, or where are they, or are they working locally?
Well, the reason
oftentimes they are working in the city.
Okay.
Yes, definitely in downtown Boston. Both communities offer a very easy, quick commute to downtown Boston.
So, how is it working with a luxury buyer or seller versus a normal buyer or seller? I mean, we've talked about this a couple of different times where, there's culturally some differences in working with a high-end client, it seems to me. And I'm wondering, in your marketplace, what are some of the notable differences you see?
You know, I think the important thing is creating value.
Uh-huh.
I really don't differentiate. I'll be honest with you, the high-end versus the low-end, but there are two things that would come to mind if I had to say something. Is number one, you always have to create value. They're looking at things from a value point of view as an investment and what's my exit strategy, and that's on the buyer side. On the listing side, they're looking at the marketing more carefully.
Mm-hmm.
They're really dissecting what is the marketing package, because you're living with these clients for, sometimes 9 months or a year, and so they really are trying to say, well, what are you going to be doing to market my home?
Mm-hmm.
You're putting on a $500,000 listing, and it sells in one weekend. They're not even asking those questions.
But, also as high-end brokers, we're very resourceful, and we know a lot of high-end brokers that do a lot of business as well. So if you're dealing with a very, very high-end client and money is no object, you do make phone calls, and you do try to create something that even perhaps isn't on the market. Some of these reload buyers with deep pockets will spend a little bit more because they have the money and they want what they want. So I think that sometimes it's thinking outside of the box and either looking at old expired or driving through neighborhoods and making phone calls.
Mm. Okay. I have a question. This is just from a buyer's standpoint. Do you find your buyers, how are they finding the properties? Because I know with a lot of buyers out here in California, they are all addicted to their to their phones, and they're finding listings out,
Oh, I love the house, but oh, look, there's a squirrel over there. I got to go look at that one, too.
Or it's coming soon, and it's obviously not on multiple. Are you guys seeing a lot of that yourselves?
Oh, of course. Think anyone, what's interesting is a lot of the old veteran brokers that aren't in tune with social media, the latest technology, I could see their business slowly, changing,
mm-hmm.
and they're
disintegrating.
And everybody's online. Everybody's into immediate gratification. Everybody's looking at the pictures. So you sort of have to embrace that and look at it from a buyer's point of view. And as like Cheryl said, whether it's low end or high end, I don't see this necessarily as just the price of the house that you're buying or selling. It's you got to bring value. You got to be resourceful. You got to, whether you're bringing, you're recommending, the contractor or the interior designer or the roofer, or there's an inspection issue. How do I solve this? They're online as well, and so you've got to understand that and work with it.
Yeah.
And any broker that doesn't, they're out. They're just old school.
Yeah. So it's kind of like they, I guess they feel like the dinosaurs felt. It was, they were looking around, they're going, where are all of our buddies?
And it's also the
I think they call them kitchen brokers.
A kitchen brokers?
Oh,
kitchen
brokers. That. What is that? I like that.
Where they got that. But that, yeah, we've heard that before.
Kitchen brokers.
But you do have to stay on top of the technology, and you have to have people to manage that as well, which is really one of the fabulous features of our companies because, you know, we're doing open houses where we have people that manage and tweet and blog, and so you have to be in the forefront for sure.
Huh.
So the industry has changed, and we're changing with it and really trying to stay on top of it and ahead of it, I should say.
It looks like we just got an email question in from Pete in San Mateo. How did the Boston bombings affect your business and the real estate market? Oh, that's a good question.
That's a really good one. You know, it's funny. I was at the airport when this happened, and I was glued to my iPhone until I hit one of, like, until we hit CNN. The city closed down, and immediately there were some deals that fell apart with condos in Back Bay in the area. And because Boston is so resilient, and it's just such an amazing, amazing hub, they just rallied right back. And, it, you know, even the storefronts that were closed for a while, it really did not affect real estate value at all, other than just the immediate aftermath of it.
I think it was like a, for me, it was like a little bit of a bump in the road. It lasted no more than like a week or 10 days. And I think Boston people are very resilient and they want to prove to everyone in the world that, you know, we'll survive. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of people that won't let things like that get in their way. For the immediate time, there was, a kind of a pause in the market. And I think because everyone was so focused, you know, on that tragedy and watching it. So for the moment, it did take some time out of the market. But even as real estate agents, I mean, we all wanted to, you know, see it through and watch it. But after that, then you see this resurgence of, you know, we're Boston and we're survivors and we're not going to ever let this get in our way.
Well, there you go, Pete. There's your answer. So let's go back to the international for a moment. What are you guys doing as a company to go out and attract those international buyers for your marketplace?
Well, I had said earlier that we have hired, you know, brokers in our company that speak Mandarin because we are seeing a lot of overseas buyers. There are publications and papers that our brokers that work with us, you know, have access to and know how, obviously, to do the translation. So we are in the process of putting our, you know, ads in, you know, publications. We actually have a broker in our company that is a builder, and he goes back and forth to Hong Kong and brings even our listing information there, too. So I'm sure Amy has more input on this as well, but we definitely are tapping very heavily into that market.
That's interesting because you're reminding me of we've both gone and seen Dolly, what's her name?
Linz
out of New York, and she was doing the exact same thing. She was personally going and taking, you know, all these high-end listings from Manhattan and running to Hong Kong and literally selling them, so to speak, by brochure to people and bringing people back. And there is definitely an appetite there, so that's interesting. So you guys have three principals, three owners.
Yeah, and my question is, there's just two of us, so how do you delegate?
How do you not kill each other?
You know, I think it's funny that you're saying that, too, and in a funny way, I think when you have three people, it's a, not that, you know, we don't all agree, you know, number one, and that would be unnatural if we all did and said that everything is perfect, but we do have meetings and we sit down and we discuss things, but it's a little bit easier, I think, in having three partners because you tend to see that, you know, two people are not always the same two people have an agreement or a position to take.
Wait, so maybe
I'm thinking two against one.
Sell an idea.
I know. She's thinking two against one. Does that mean I need to get another wife, too?
We beat up on the third partner.
Exactly. Because inevitably.
You need a third partner.
I need a third member to my marriage. Okay,
you
that's
do.
It.
Yeah, because I always hate to be the one saying, I think you're wrong.
Oh, that's funny. Do you guys now? Do all three of you sell as well as run an office or manage? I mean, so you're all in leadership, obviously. Do you all actively sell as you're doing that as well? Because sometimes that's a difficult balancing act as well.
Yeah, every day we live that balancing act because all three of us do sell, and that's why the phone is ringing like crazy. But we never compete with the brokers in our company. And I think the biggest thrill that all three of us have, because we've all communicated it, is mentoring these new brokers and having them become superstars in our community. It's so rewarding. It's so much fun. And so, you know, with us selling, we're in the trenches and we're out there and we really know what's happening. And that was my biggest criticism working for a big company is they have these managers that, number one, they turn their phones off on the weekend. And they would go to open houses to learn the inventory, but they really weren't in the trenches.
Yeah.
And so I really feel that that's been part of the reason we're so successful. And we've taken people from different venues and different business backgrounds, and we've launched them. I mean, I really feel that, you know, even like the award show that we said we have to celebrate these people, we call them the BOLD Awards, B-O-L-D, Building Our Legacy Daily, because our whole mission statement is celebrate our talent and find the future next producers. So we're like kind of using our knowledge in the marketplace, you know, to do this. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we are continuing to sell, but that will change as time comes, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, though, you know, it's just having gone through the various iterations of companies over the years, you guys are in a really sweet spot in terms of the size of your organization and the nature of the marketplace that you're at, if that makes sense. There's a certain point as you grow, you know, where you lose touch and you don't necessarily gain either profitability or traction by just having more people. You sometimes have if you have a really good ball team of, in your case, 60, 65 agents and you're profitable and everything's going well, that's better than having 120 agents and suddenly cutting your profit in half and having all the more headaches. You know, does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I think
No, I was going to say it definitely makes sense to us, and it's really a company that's getting noticed a lot. Amy and I laugh all the time, as well as Debbie, because even if you look at some of our advertisement, we're noticing the larger companies mimicking what we're doing. So, you know, I think we're a very special, and I think there's a need for a very specialized, more personal approach to real estate that I think, you know, it offers a different approach than other larger companies do.
Yeah, you don't have to cut through all of that minutia and all that.
You don't have the 47
layers. All the layers.
But it's also, you know, the philosophy was like hire bodies and like, you know, or just open up like other little offices that really – they're not doing any business, but all of a sudden you have like a X office in X town. But it's just the amount of production per broker in our company is like unprecedented. And, you know, it's just because it feeds on itself and it's the kind of people we're bringing in. And you're right. We don't want to become too big too fast. We want to perfect our craft and what we're doing. And so we sort of took what we've learned through the years working in a big company and said, well, listen, what's working, what's not working? Let's, you know, and created something a little different.
You know, I want to come back to, after this break, we're going to come back. I want to find out about how you select your people since you mentioned the productivity. So we'll be right back after this quick break. Welcome back to the Property Beat, where we are talking luxury properties in the outside of the Boston area with Amy Meisner and Cheryl Simon. So, all right, ladies, I said I needed to know about your top secret agent selecting techniques. How do you pick your people?
We know what not to pick. I can tell you that. It's almost easier.
Okay, let's hear that.
Let's hear that one.
We're not... You know, it's about, they don't have to come with a, we actually like mentoring people better than we like taking people in that have already had, you know, a career somewhere else, maybe not successful, learned bad habits. So I think we have a lot of fun grooming them and teaching them like our tricks. But it's, for us, it's really important about, you know, their network. They have to sell themselves to us, you know, whether or not they have a real estate background isn't as important as, you know, their background is what they did and what their networking is. Do they belong to country clubs? Are they social?
Mm-hmm.
No, our two top agents in Wellesley that have teamed up, the Donna Humaley team, they actually didn't come with a real estate background, but they are so embedded in that Wellesley community that they are the top two team agents in the Wellesley market, working 2 years in the marketplace. So the strides they've made are incredible, but they have this passion and this energy that's just palatable, and people, you know, get that. And they've just been our superstars. And then we have a number one broker in our office as well that just was flirting with real estate, and then she's very committed now, but she's off the charts, and her husband's a VC guy, and it's really about the connections that you have. So,
yeah,
I tried
to marry one of those VC guys, and it just didn't work.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I said I tried to marry one of those VC guys for his connections. It just didn't work.
He went to the wrong guy. Maybe I should try it.
But we have brokers in our company that have an architectural degree, mm-hmm. That are lawyers. But there's a spark and an energy that we see with people, and a passion, and there's just like this feeling about them that you just feel like they're going to be a winner out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, when we sit down and talk to them, we both look at each other, or Debbie will look, you know, the three of us will sit there and go, yes, this is a winner. And we really haven't been proven wrong. We are just thrilled with who we have. And again, those mentoring classes and helping them along, I think, has really been the difference in really creating stars.
Yeah, I agree with that. You get that little spark. Hey, out here in the West Coast, we're seeing a lot of discussion with buyers and agents about the price per square foot of a property. Are you guys seeing that same kind of effect in your area?
You know, now it's tabulated online in Boston. You know, mm-hmm. that really emanates from, like, the condo market, you know, per square foot. We're not seeing it as much in the Metro West. Sometimes you'll get a buyer that sits there with their spreadsheet and they calculate everything, and you could work with it. But, you know, a lot of times it's it's really condition. You can get a 3,500-square-foot home that sells more than a 5,000-square-foot home because of condition. It's not like the condo market in Boston, yes. The condo market in Boston, yes. Outside, no. In our market.
Yeah. It's not quite the same here.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, it also has to, it's one of the things that I think is a side effect of the onlineness, if you will, of real estate. Because companies like the Trulias and the Zillows are posting these statistics up, and they're preaching this mentality to the buyers. And so the buyers tend to, and we're seeing a lot out here across all price stratas. But in particular, we're seeing in the luxury market where, you know, if it's $2,000 a square foot, they're going, I don't know, you know, as opposed to, so that we are seeing that out here anyway. So,
and you want to know the biggest trend that we're seeing is it's being driven by the young empty nesters that have buying power,
uh-huh.
You know, the 50 to 65-year-olds,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's looking for smaller but really high quality.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
That.
Yeah,
big is not better necessarily, it's quality.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of the Z word, Zillow,
are
you guys having any kind of challenges created by those estimates, and are they accurate in your area?
Yeah, we have to dance around that because, yes, of course we have that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you always have that buyer that are feeding you those statistics and those estimates. But, you know, it is an internet company. They're not out there looking at condition. They're not looking specifically at location. They're not looking at, you know, upgrades. They're not looking at, you know, the way the house is manicured or not manicured.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't take it as a terribly reliable source as brokers because
mm-hmm.
they are not in the field looking at these houses and really, you know, comparing one to the other. It's really more of a square footage price, and we just don't see it in our marketplace. I think, again, it's more effective in the condo market maybe in Boston, but not out in this area.
So it sounds like we're
And of course, people use it to their advantage when they're negotiating.
Oh,
for sure.
Yeah. But it also sounds like we're all telling our buyers the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Know, it's not accurate. What are the biggest challenges you're seeing today in the market?
For me, what I'm seeing, and I'm sure Amy sees something, you know, different or similar, but for me, it's always about educating. You know, sellers always are looking for pie in the sky numbers, mm-hmm. and buyers always looking to steal. So it's always about educating, you know, and sometimes you have to, as a buyer, lose a few until you, you know, trust and value the opinion of the broker
that's
you know,
true.
Giving you relative comps. And I think for the seller, they have to see some of the competition selling before them until they understand that pricing is key. You know, you hear a lot of media, you know, there's so many articles and there's so many media spreads about how fabulous the market is, and it's a very good market, but it's not that it's an overinflated market as well. So you have to just deal with the market that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So if our listening audience wants to get in contact with you folks, how do they do that?
Well, you certainly can call Cheryl or I and go to our website at Benoit Meisner Simon & Company.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, you can get our cell numbers or our office numbers directly from there. The Weston office is 781-894-8282. Our Wellesley office is 781-237-8181. And you'll be able to find out more about us by just going on our website, Benoit Meisner Simon & Company. So,
and please encourage your listeners to be bicoastal.
Wow.
Well, I'm thinking bicoastal. I think we need a field trip to come out and visit you,
yeah,
ladies.
You know,
I love San Francisco.
We love it.
We love Boston.
Time there. So Boston,
we're coming first.
Okay.
It's on the water as well. So, yeah.
Well, we are fun anyway, so be prepared.
Uh-oh.
Pack your bags, ladies.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
I'm
well,
there.
Thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you.
It's been a real kick and a lot of fun catching up with you guys. Sounds like things are going really well for you, and we wish you the best of success in what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
And we'd like to thank our listening audience, and thank you, Miss Lisa P., and to Carlos in the booth. So if you want to hear this show again, you can download the podcast on iTunes or on our website at thepropertybeat.com. That's it for this week. Well, that's a wrap for this week's show. Thanks for joining us here at The Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. We hope you've enjoyed this week's show and encourage you to come back next week, when we've got yet another lively guest and more real estate conversation. If you'd like to check us out on the web, you can find us at thepropertybeat.com. For now, I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P., saying, that's a wrap. See you next time on The Property Beat.